in our philosophy is the foundation of health. And if there's anything going on, you can have infections or buildup of toxins or be consuming foods that create inflammation or, you know, irritation in the system. We definitely want to resolve that because those things, the gut being out of whack and consuming foods you're sensitive to, both create, they kind of put your immune system in overdrive.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And oh my goodness, it's my weekend. I hope it's your weekend too. 7 p.m. every Friday night, I'm here with you, bringing you new and interesting people that I find on my journey when we always call ourselves here thrivers, not survivors. And absolutely just really excited. Oh, I have a great new tea here. It's they called it a London Fog. I'd call it like an extra spicy chai tea, but it's really good. It's got homemade almond milk in it too. So we'll ask our guest if she'll probably tell me I shouldn't be drinking it, but it's really good. Oh. Anyway, it's fantastic. It's a little spicy. Yeah, really spicy compared to what I call my normal chai tea. Wow. Okay, but it's fabulous, guys. You should try it. It'll keep me awake, I know, for at least the next hour, because I'm so excited to have Kelsey Ale here, and she's a certified nutritional therapy practitioner, and she began her career in the health and wellness industry over a decade ago. She has a background in Pilates and is a certified massage therapist and trained as a paleo chef. I mean, wow, talk about being able to know all aspects of it all. With her in-depth knowledge of anatomy and physiology, she approaches her nutrition practice from a whole body perspective. Isn't that nice to know? How many times have we been given advice and we're like, that doesn't sound right. So Kelsey creates individualized nutrition, supplement, and wellness plans that address each client's needs, that focus on the bio-individuality and allows her to meet each person where they're at and create a completely customized plan to ensure that health goals are achieved. She believes that proper nutrition is one of the most fundamental tools that we can use for a healthy, happy life. And I couldn't agree more. I think using everything I learned about nutrition in the last 3 years as I continue my healing journey has created the biggest change, the fastest change in my health, was understanding nutrition and actually giving up a few things I love. So we'll talk to Kelsey about that too, how we get past those little owies. I don't feel good. I still want my cookie.
Yeah.
So welcome, Kelsey. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and have an opportunity to talk to you.
We're just thrilled to have you here too, because as I said in that little introduction, I think understanding nutrition and a lot of the beliefs I had about quality eating, if you'd asked me 3.5 years ago before my diagnosis, did I have a healthy diet? I would have said absolutely yes. Now I look back and I say, absolutely not. So anyway, tell us a little bit about your story. What led you to becoming a nutritional therapy practitioner?
Well, it's interesting. It actually stems from exactly what you just said. I thought I had a really healthy diet, and it ended up making me really sick. I was a vegetarian for about 12 years and experimented with veganism as well within that time. I think, first of all, I didn't understand healthy eating. I just thought not eating meat meant I was healthy. So I'm sure I wasn't getting the proper nutrients. Also, I started when I was a teenager, so that was a little bit rebellious. But yeah, you know, after exploring different ways of being vegetarian, being vegan, being raw vegan, I got really sick. I was sick for about 5 years. Wow. And I think that especially those of us who have an illness with like a slow and steady onset, you kind of learn to deal with it until it gets to the point where you can't just ignore it anymore. So I had one of those moments where I probably hadn't been feeling great leading up to this moment. I just wasn't paying attention to it. But I had kind of an episode where I had driven a couple of hours in the car to meet a friend. And as I stood up and got out of the car, I had a sharp shooting pain in my lower right abdomen. And that was, you know, I tried to ignore it for the couple of days that I was visiting a friend, and I ultimately couldn't. And I ended up in the emergency clinic when I got back home. Wow. And they were afraid my appendix was going to burst. And so luckily they found out that wasn't the case. So they sent me to get some ultrasounds done. Well, they were looking for cysts on my kidneys or on my ovaries, and there was nothing to be found to the ultrasound. So they sent me to get blood work done. And at this point, they weren't even really telling me what they were looking for. I just knew they weren't finding it. Like, all of my tests were coming back negative and normal. And in the meantime, I'd gotten to the point where I was so sick some days that I couldn't eat and I couldn't get out of bed. And I was really frustrated because this was the first time in my life that I had ever had to turn to medicine to really try to help me. And just the fact that they had no good answers to give me was really frustrating. And I was still in pain. So that kind of sparked my journey. And I clung to my vegetarian and vegan dogma for as long as I possibly could. And actually reintroducing meat into my diet was the one thing that really started to turn my health around. And that led me to a really, I think, profound realization that, like, our bodies don't really care what we think is healthy. We have a certain set of nutrient needs that have to be met. So our beliefs about what is healthy versus what our body actually needs can sometimes be two separate things. But if we can accept that everyone's body has different needs, and at the same time, we all have generally similar needs, if we understand what those needs are from a more biological or scientific perspective rather than from a fad diet perspective, we'll be a lot more effective in healing ourselves. So that's a little bit about my personal story. But as far as autoimmune disease goes, that's actually something I don't talk about as much because it's a little bit unresolved for me in the fact that I have a predisposition on both sides of my family to autoimmune. My mom's side is thyroid, and my dad has had really bad asthma his entire life and has been suffering from rheumatoid arthritis for a couple of decades now. But neither one of them is really taking effective action other than taking immunosuppressant drugs or, you know, I mean, I think there's a time and a place for essential oils, but I don't think that they're going to like solve all the world's problems. So, you know, you have to be effective. So it's been challenging. And I think in that sense, my dad in particular has been one of my biggest teachers, that you can really only help people who are willing to help themselves. But in the meantime, it's been really challenging to watch him suffer. But then at the same time, I feel like I'm doing well by myself, or like for myself, by addressing my health and choosing to take more of a holistic and well-rounded nutrition and natural healing approach before my health gets to the point where my doctor is telling me they want to fuse my wrist bones together or something like that.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's kind of a common story. I hear that a lot. And even it reflects my story too, that I think looking back, I knew something wasn't right years before. You know, and it was just a slow and steady adaptation, coping, and then all of a sudden a full-blown condition happened. So as much as it was a surprise, it wasn't a surprise. And that's, I think, I hear that a lot with people going, you know, looking back, all the signs were there. However, often I hear too that, and I've had that frustration myself, going in for multiple tests and they're always saying there's nothing wrong. Like, look, you know, this is happening, that's happening, this, do you think I'm faking this skin rash?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think it's especially frustrating with symptoms like chronic fatigue or like joint pain and that sort of thing that, you know, I feel like a skin rash is probably more visible, but when you have these conditions that can be, I don't know, kind of like blown off a little bit more easily by even your friends or your family, it can kind of probably start to cause you to question your own experience too a little. right, to a little extent.
A lot of times, some of the things that we've talked about on the show with over 150 episodes, we've had several guests on where I always say it's about confirming our own sanity at some times that, look, this is really what's going on for us. It's not just something that's, you know, we're faking it or making it up. And I think that often mm-hmm. happens, but you're so right. Numerous times I was told that my condition is lifelong. Get used to it. Be realistic. I love that one, Sharon. Be realistic. But I gave myself I gave myself 3 years. I don't know where the 3 years came from. I honestly don't know where that came from. But I gave myself 3 years. And it took me 3 years and 2 months. So I figured I did pretty good to get off all of the all of the immune suppressant drugs and everything else, completely drug free. And so that was a big excitement. But you're right that I talk to a lot of people that have autoimmune, obviously, and so many of them have a difficult time, what I'll say, giving up the life that got them there. And so let's talk a little bit about what do you do when you mentioned your father is resistant, but sometimes we don't have permission with us closest to us. But let's take it out a step to with a client who's probably... I think my biggest time giving up were what I call my emotional comfort foods. Those were things I'd learned since childhood. You know, have a cookie, you'll feel better. What are some tips you have for people that have maybe some comfort food? They're like, but Kelsey, I can't give up my mashed potatoes.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think especially when it comes to comfort food and then also the topic of emotional eating, I think that there are definitely multiple methods you can use. First of all, I always encourage people to try to find, and it might sound kind of cheesy or, you know, non-dairy cheesy, but try to find a healthier version of the comfort food that you typically crave. And I try to tell people, you know, you're probably going to have to make it and it's not going to taste exactly like the thing that you have known since childhood, but eventually your tastes will change as your body heals itself. And so that comfort food that's the healthier version will become equally comforting, especially because it's not only meeting that emotional need, but you're not depleting your body and sending yourself into like an inflammatory and potentially depressive state. The other side to that, though, that I think is really important and I always try to incorporate into my work is addressing the psychological component and like the underlying emotional need behind the eating of a comfort food, which I don't know how in depth we want to go into that, but I always, you know, I do work with clients who experience disordered eating or binge eating and emotional eating. And I've started to work a lot more with something as simple as journaling. And when you feel an impulse coming on, when you feel a desire to binge, when you feel that need for the cookie, maybe just stop for a second. Doesn't mean you can't have the cookie in that moment. Eventually, we hope you won't eat the cookie. But in that moment, it can just be really helpful to, like, for lack of a better phrase, become present. And when I talk about journaling, I mention to people, just kind of jot down, where are you? What are you feeling? And what's going on around you? And just kind of start to draw awareness to that connection. In a therapy term, we would call that an overcoupling. You have a connection with feeling good and a particular food that actually is bad for you. So if we can start to kind of work those two apart and address them individually, it makes it a lot easier to break the habit and the craving for that particular food also.
Yeah, and I think that's where it's important someone like yourself come into this equation, because so many traditionally trained medical people have very little nutrition background. I remember the first diagnosis, I went to see a specialist, and I had been diagnosed a while before you get in to see these specialists. I remember, so I was trying to do many things myself. They might be considered very simple, but you know, when you're in the throes of it, you do what you can. And that was eating more fruits and vegetables and a little bit less meat and eating organic only, cooking everything at home. So I knew what in. I'd given up gluten, dairy, sugar, this whole long list of things, drinking only filtered water. And I remember walking into the specialist and he says, so what have you been doing so far? And I went through this list. And in all honesty, I was stunned. He looked at me and said, well, you know, none of that is going to help.
And oh my gosh.
I was stunned, but as a communication specialist, as my kids say in my other life, I looked at him and just blunted out, well, it's not going to hurt. But the problem was that this authority figure, as I like to call them, the white coat authority, this little evil twin popped up on my shoulder and whispered it in my ear and said, "See, I told you you could have had that milkshake." And so I think we have to be careful about allowing, I'll just say, the right thoughts in or knowing how to combat when something sabotages our best efforts. And so I like the idea of journaling. Are there other things that maybe somebody says, well, you know, it happened to me on the, I don't know, somewhere I'm driving and I have this sudden crave to swing in through the drive through or something. What are, do you have some tips that people can, some other tips about cravings? Because I think that's the one I hear the most about. It's like, oh my gosh, maybe it's not an emotional thing. Well, I don't know. If you'd all of a sudden see a drive through, maybe that is an emotional thing.
Or you get an association with
yeah, it. Yeah, some sort of weird association, like all of a sudden this craving for whatever their their little logo is.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that when it comes to craving, it's cravings. It's again, it's kind of, I try not to overcomplicate things, but there are always different perspectives you can look to. So I always recommend that people, especially if you do travel a lot in your car and you notice that you have a tendency like, oh, if I stop to get gas, maybe I'll just run and grab a candy bar. If you know you have a tendency toward that habit, definitely keep snacks in your purse, your bag, your car that support your health. Again, you can find something that's close to what you would normally crave. But that keeps you on track with like with the low inflammation diet and keeps your digestion healthy and gets you all of the nutrients you need. So I definitely recommend keeping nuts. I think nuts are an easy one for a lot of people. And we can talk more specifically about like, you know, the bio-individual nutrition aspect. Nuts aren't great for everyone, but generally things that keep well, right? So like you have your nuts, and then there are some really great jerkies out there that are grass-fed jerky. They also have salmon jerky if you prefer fish. And then have a piece of fresh fruit with you as well. Apples travel really well. That's probably the one that I usually go to because they don't bruise as easily, and they don't bruise as easily as like a pear, and they're easier to deal with than an orange. Yeah, definitely keep some healthy snacks with you so that at least eliminates one excuse you have, like, oh, I'm hungry and I don't have anything. No, you do have something else you could choose. Like, either come up with a better excuse or just go with that.
I think that's really important. So that's, you know, it is. I travel a lot myself, and I do always tend to carry a lot of food. I think that's, I even carry food in my checked it bag. I think that's why my bag gets opened a lot. But I'm not sure that's just sort of my science of sharing. Like every time I'm carrying a lot of food through my checked luggage, I get my bag opened. We need to take a quick commercial break, guys. We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to talk some more with Kelsey Ale about nutrition and our healing. So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. I want to share a really cool new thing that we're doing over at lifeinterruptedradio.com. It's called the Transcribe Tribe. Now, we've done over 130, 140 episodes already. They're not all transcribed yet, but go over, sign up for the Autoimmune Hours Transcribe Tribe, and you'll be able to get transcriptions. And if you don't find one that you're looking for, just drop us a note there on the website, and we'll be sure and get that one up in the top of the queue. So join us over at lifeinterruptedradio.com, Transcribe Tribe.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts Program. with Om Times experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And today we're here with Kelsey Ale. She's a certified nutritional therapy practitioner, as well as has a background in Pilates and a certified massage therapist and a trained paleo chef. And today we're just talking in depth about nutrition and how to see ourselves from the whole body perspective. So, Kelsey, you know, I love your tips about what I'll call those emergency moments. It's emotional eating, and all of a sudden you're traveling somewhere, even just in your car, and you realize, gosh, I'm hungry, and the only thing I see are those jingled fast food places that are calling my name, or I'm hearing the jingle in my head. Let's talk a little bit, though. With autoimmune, oftentimes people come up with food sensitivities, and you deal a lot with this bio-individuality perspective. What are some ways that we can know or find out what our food sensitivities might be?
Honestly, I am becoming more and more of a proponent of objective testing in my practice. In fact, I'm getting to the point where I'm requiring testing before I begin to work with anyone, just because it helps me help you get better faster. And especially when it comes to food sensitivities, they can be so interesting and so unexpected that I think it's really important to get objective testing done. Because, for example, when I ran my own test, I always run the test on myself before I suggest it to any client. So the first food sensitivity test I did was an antibody test, and I came up as being sensitive to carrots. I'm like, you don't think of carrots as being bad for you, you know, but they create inflammation in my system. Carrots, almonds, and then cow dairy, of course, which I think is a really common one for a lot of people. But I definitely recommend at the end of the day to get some objective testing done. But a place that you can start today is to cut out the main offenders. I think this is part of why I generally recommend a paleo diet as a good framework for people to go into a healing nutritional kind of protocol for themselves. We want to eliminate dairy, gluten, soy, and corn. So those are the top four. They're actually in the top nine, as you know, stated by our government health officials, being some of the top nine food allergens. But a lot of people have sensitivities to them. And when we have these food sensitivities, you have to be very aware, first of all, that they're hiding in packaged foods in ways you might not expect, especially soy. It's in a lot of different things because it's an emulsifier. It helps foods stay together. So I think starting today, you can just cut out those foods and give yourself about 4 weeks with none of those foods in your diet. And then you can do what's called a reintroduction diet, which is you pick one of those foods. So say you cut out gluten, you've been really good for 4 weeks, you've been able to completely avoid it. you'll want to have a meal that contains gluten. And it doesn't, don't take like just a tiny bite of bread, like eat a whole piece of bread and see how you feel. I pretty much guarantee you though, if you cut out gluten for 4 weeks and you eat it again, you're probably going to feel like crap because the majority of people who even aren't like, you know, celiac, I think is a really well-known food sensitivity based autoimmune condition. But even when you're non-celiac, at least 65% of the population has non-celiac gluten sensitivity. So it can still be causing an inflammatory response within your diet within your body, even if you're not like allergic to it. So there's sensitivities and there are true allergies, but they both cause inflammation in your body.
Right. Well, you know, an interesting one for me though, when we talk about that, with the reintroduction diet, was what's your experience? I've been told that, you know, you should be careful with the reintroduction of one thing at a time because it could take up to 3 or 4 days for you to begin to feel something. Like, it's not like you eat that piece of bread and within 2 minutes your face swells or something. It can take a while for the inflammation to reappear. I find that some people say, well, I ate bread and I was fine. And then all of a sudden, a week later, their joints are hurting because they're back to eating bread all the time or something along those lines. Have you noticed there's a timeline that people can go, okay, I reintroduced it and nothing happened within this time frame?
Yes. Well, first of all, I haven't really had much experience with people reintroducing things like dairy or gluten and not having a reaction. But generally, when I'm coaching someone on the reintroduction phase of an elimination diet, we give one food about 5 days. You can do it, like try that one food and give it a week to see if you notice any kind of latent effects or anything that's happening, you know, after the immediate consumption. And if after about 5 days, you're not noticing a reaction, then I would say it's safe to include that food in your diet again. But if you notice any reaction, and it doesn't just have to be a digestive response, you might not get bloated, but maybe you have acne or you have brain fog. Those are still connected to you introducing something to your body that in this case would be that particular food. And that food is having a systemic effect. So I think that's another key piece to be aware of. Like, yes, definitely wait a period of time. I would say at least 5 days. Some people say up to a week to test that one food. And then also be aware that it might not make you bloated, but you might notice other, like you're saying, you might notice the joint pain, which isn't necessarily a digestive effect, but it's definitely a sign that your body has increased inflammation.
Well, a question about that then. Let's say we reintroduce gluten, so I'm eating this piece of proverbial bread. Now, do I just eat that one piece of bread and wait 5 days, or can I eat 5 pieces of bread, one a day?
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend, again, I'm like, please nobody eat gluten. But, you know, I recommend like hitting it not relatively hard that first day, but I would at least eat it the first day and then wait a couple of days to see if you notice any effects. So I would wait, eat the first day, give it a break for days two and three. If you're not necessarily noticing anything at that point, maybe eat another meal containing gluten and then again, give it another couple of days before you assess. I would not recommend to eat a lot of it over a period of time because like you're saying, you know, if the effects are delayed, well, that they're also probably a little bit cumulative. So you're setting yourself up for a bigger fall in the days to come. So yeah, that's a really good question.
And note that it doesn't have to be gluten, guys. Like she said, she doesn't recommend gluten. Let's choose something. We'll say a pear, and we'll just go off. Because I know I have some odd ones too. I used to love hummus, but I found out I couldn't have chickpeas. So I was like, wow, isn't that weird?
And I think again, that's why it's so important to have your tests run at the end of the day. And there are different kinds of tests that you can have run. The one that I'm really interested right now is what's called a cell-mediated response test, which means that you don't have to produce antibodies in response to the food to tell whether or not you're sensitive to it. So it's pretty interesting because it also, I think that sometimes when you're taking an antibody test, so if you're familiar with that, the inflammatory markers or the IgG and IgE might be like terms you've heard thrown around, those antibodies have to be present in your bloodstream to get a positive reading. And oftentimes, if you haven't eaten the food within a few days before taking the test, then you won't necessarily test positive for those sensitivities, even though you might be. So for example, for me personally, when I took my test, gluten didn't show up on my results. I also hadn't eaten it in, you know, probably 6 or 8 months. I had been really kind of solidly strict about it. And so, you know, I went off probably like some of my clients do, where they're like, oh, I didn't test positive for gluten, I'm going to go eat gluten. So I did the thing that most people probably do, where I went out and I had pasta and some couscous, and it was really good. And the next day I woke up and I couldn't move my head, and I had this terrible brain fog. And I was like, okay, well, clearly I'm sensitive to gluten, even though it didn't show up on the, on the test. Yeah, especially for things like pears. I have clients who are sensitive to things like garlic, squash. So interesting things that you think could be healthy might not be great for your body right now. But I think that's also, it's important to understand that there's an even more underlying factor beyond the sensitivity that you can help resolve and heal, so that at some point you can include pears in your diet again.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to take another quick commercial break, guys, but that's what I want to talk more about when we get back, is this idea of inflammation. I think that's often misunderstood about what that is and how that affects the food that comes into our mouth can help exacerbate inflammation in our system, as well as we're going to talk to her and have her describe what exactly is the word paleo diet, because we hear that tossed around a lot now, and it's like not just caveman food, you know, we're not out there getting some saber-toothed tiger or something. So we'll be right back right after this quick commercial break.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? Cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times, 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour, but maybe you didn't know I'm also an author. But recently I delved into the world of children's fiction with the Pinky Chenille series. The first book launched just a couple of weeks ago, and it's already getting awesome reviews. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. If you haven't had a chance to check out Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, go over and check it out at pinkychenille.com. That's Pinky, P-I-N-K-Y, Chenille, C-H-E-N-I-L-L-E.com. Thanks. See you there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and I'm here today with Kelsey Ayle. She's a certified nutritional therapy practitioner, as well as a Pilates instructor, certified massage therapist, and trained paleo chef. Trying to say that all in too fast there.
It's a lot.
It is. We've learned so much already about emotional eating and food sensitivities, and now I want to jump into a couple of things, but lightly just touch on this idea. We've tossed around the word inflammation, and I think all of us who have autoimmune condition has heard that word tossed around a lot. But it's fascinating to me how little inflammation is understood. So from a dietary perspective, how does a nutritional therapy practitioner approach inflammation?
Well, I think when we brought in the idea of food sensitivities, that's usually one place that I start. But generally, from a nutritional therapy perspective, we always look at the gut, because the gut you know, in our philosophy is the foundation of health. And if there's anything going on, you can have infections or buildup of toxins or be consuming foods that create inflammation or, you know, irritation in the system. We definitely want to resolve that, because those things, the gut being out of whack and consuming foods you're sensitive to, both create, they kind of put your immune system in overdrive. I consider inflammation to be tissue irritation, but I always start to look at digestion first, because you can take drugs, you can take supplements, you can eat a great diet, but if you can't absorb or assimilate any of it, then it's not really going to help you.
Now, inflammation just isn't sore joints, right? It can appear, the word inflammation is sort of tossed around to me as sort of a catch-all, and too many people think of it as just waking up with, you know, sore joints. What else, how else does inflammation appear?
Well, I guess the first thing that comes to mind for me, you know, again, touching on the digestive health, is any sort of bloating that you have intestinally is a form of inflammation. And again, I like kind of maybe thinking about it more as like irritation in the tissues. So a skin rash is also inflammation. Anytime your immune system is triggered to respond, it's going to create some sort of inflammation, because that's the immune mediating response. Like you have to send more blood flow to the area, that increases the heat. Heat is a common like symptom of inflammation. Sending more immune cells there means more things happening in that area. So a little bit of swelling is going to happen. That's another common sign of inflammation. So I think thinking about inflammation as kind of tissue irritation might help give a different perspective, because, again, it can look a lot of different ways, but it's the same kind of immune response happening in all those different examples.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because a lot of times people say, but my joints don't hurt. But you're kind of like, well, that skin rash or, you know, whatever could be a sign of inflammation. I think it's important for people not to look at that as just, you know, the one thing that you wake up with sore joints, or wake up with sore ankles or something along those lines. So let's define, I know another, it's really popular now, the paleo diet. You get so many mixed emotions on choosing on the word diet. Everything from, as you mentioned, you were heavy into vegetarianism and veganism for a while, and you get so many mixed emotions on a wide variety of diets. For you, what changed your mind, and what was let's define the paleo diet for people.
Yeah, so the paleo diet is considered to be foods that were available to us before the agricultural revolution. So the idea is that our digestive systems and our bodies developed completely before the agricultural revolution, and we developed eating things like, you know, they're very early versions of like the vegetables that we have now, and some fruit, some nuts and seeds, whatever we could find, lean game meat, seafood, whatever we could kind of source from that. And I think it's also interesting to consider that when you think about a true paleo diet, you want to think about fat being your friend, because fat, you know, in the hunter-gatherer days was such a valuable energy resource for us that we really valued it and we were not afraid of it. So I think, I try to push that idea gently, because some people are still, you know, we have a lot of work to do, I think, in undoing the confusion that was created in the past about low-fat diets being better for us. But you want to think about fat being healthy and good for your body. Generally foods that you could hunt and gather. And when we think about foods that we avoid on the paleo diet, those would be things like dairy. We didn't have animal husbandry. We didn't necessarily have a lot of domestication happening before the agricultural revolution. So dairy wasn't really available to us. And the thought is that our systems developed without dairy. Same thing for beans and legumes. We didn't have a lot of those. Those have been cultivated more so since the agricultural revolution. Our systems don't do very well with that. Gluten, grains, the things that the agricultural revolution were based on, weren't available to us before that time period. So again, the idea is that our systems developed without this. And when we introduce those foods into our body, it throws our system off and creates a lot of inflammation.
Although when we started through that list, because I'm also thinking things like sugars, obviously that was
sugars.
But I'm sort of adding it to my own list here and thinking about that list. But when you said beans and legumes, I'm kind of going, okay, what's that leave? Kale? I mean,
yeah, pretty
so
much.
I'm thinking to myself, So let's go over some of the haves on the paleo diet. Because I got a little confused when we said no dairy, no gluten, no beans, legumes. I got a little confused there on like, okay, what's left?
Yeah. So there's actually a lot that you can do with the paleo diet, especially when you think that pretty much all fruits and vegetables are a yes. When you're dealing with autoimmune conditions, some people recommend that you cut out the nightshade vegetables, which include tomatoes, eggplant, white potatoes, bell peppers, and then goji berries. But anything else, you can have sweet potato, you can have squash if you're not sensitive to it, any of the leafy greens, anything that you can picture the rainbow of fruits and vegetables, and you can have pretty much everything that's in that rainbow. We also love nuts and seeds. We love coconut. I love it for its versatility. I love using coconut milk. Again, I'm sensitive to almonds, but if you're not sensitive to almonds, almond milk is a great non-dairy option. But a lot of people love coconut oil. Coconut meat is a great snack. Coconut cream is really great for your coffee or your tea. Also for making desserts. I love making desserts. All sorts of animal proteins. So you can still consume eggs, and you can have pretty much any seafood and any sort of land meat as well. I'm trying to think of what else. I'm sure there are things that I'm missing because it's so second nature to me at this point. But there's a lot you can have, and you'd be surprised at how much you can do with the products you can create from vegetables, for example. You know, people are coming out with a lot of great bread recipes that use root-based flours that are totally grain-free, so they don't create the same inflammatory effect, but they have the same taste. So you can still enjoy a piece of toast with almond butter. It just doesn't have any gluten in it now. Right. So I think that's the other thing to consider. You end up getting a lot more creative with the foods that you do have when you eliminate some of the quote-unquote staples of the standard American diet.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. I tried and successfully made, I was a little intimidated at first, but I made cauliflower rice. And at first I was like, oh boy, it wasn't as intimidating as the recipe made it sound, which was really nice.
Yeah. And you know what's great about that? Stores like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's here in the United States are kind of starting to catch on, and they're actually offering prepared riced cauliflower. And sometimes one of the paleo favorites is to make noodles out of zucchini. So they're actually offering zucchini noodles prepared in the store. So I mean, I live in Santa Monica, so I know I'm in a little bit of a bubble when it comes to health food and access. But I think that's a really great sign that things like that are starting to become more available. So it makes it a little bit less intimidating and more accessible if you do want to start exploring it.
Although I hear that's sad to me because my granddaughter loves making the spiral zucchini. She loves doing
She'll
the little
do it.
Machine.
She'll do it at home. Yeah.
She loves turning the little crank, doing the machine, you know, watching
these
noodles come out that, well, we'll put in air quotes, noodles that are like 3 or 4 feet long. Right. She just loves those. So, and that's the one thing I could say about the autoimmune condition. When I started doing more and more of my own cooking, I was thinking that just because it was a salad, and I picked it up anywhere, it doesn't mean it's healthy. But once I started doing more and more cooking on my own, there's so many benefits to it because then it becomes a much more family affair as well. It's not just a private thing.
No, it can be fun. You can get everybody in on it.
Absolutely. That's what I love about it. Now, I did have a question, though. You had mentioned about, let's define beans and legumes, because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, so you mean a green bean, or do you mean like a pinto bean or all beans? Mm-hmm. I'm a little confused on that, because I always thought in my mind a green bean might be healthy.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great question. And I think at the end of the day, you have to really consider the idea of balance. There are certain foods that are the lesser of the evils on that spectrum of what you should avoid. So I definitely always recommend avoiding, you know, the dairy and the gluten. But when it comes to the beans and legumes, I personally offer a little bit more wiggle room depending on where a person is health-wise. So the idea behind avoiding the beans and legumes is that they have certain mineral-binding anti-nutrients that can leave your body mineral depleted.
Wow, that sounds
when
awful.
It comes to things like,
anti-nutrients.
I know.
What a word.
Also, like, can you? Here's the other thing, like a lot of vegetables have them to a certain extent. The beans and legumes have a little bit more. So generally, I would recommend avoiding the beans that look like beans. So the pinto beans and the chickpeas and the black beans. But I eat green beans and I love them, and my body feels fine with them. So I think that's another really important point, is to get in touch with how your body feels when you're eating these things and take that into consideration and eat them in moderation. I don't eat green beans every day, green beans maybe once a month, even though they are technically a legume. I feel fine with that. So it's about moderation and just understanding the why behind the avoidance to begin with, mm-hmm. and making sure you're including, you know, foods like that in a well-rounded, healthy meal. So I think that, some of my clients love hummus as a snack. And I'm like, if that's going to get you, if you're going to eat your hummus with your cucumber slice and that's going to be satisfying for you, and that means you're eating this afternoon, then yes, it's totally fine to eat a little bit of hummus.
A cookie.
Exactly. I'm like, eat the hummus. Just don't follow it with like black bean stew followed by, you know, X, Y, and Z that would be made out of beans. Having hummus a couple of times a week is fine. Having, you know, green beans once or twice a week is fine. But again, understanding the why. So making sure you're getting other mineral rich foods in your diet. And that can also kind of balance out any mineral stealing that's happening.
Well, thank you for explaining that, because I was a little confused by that one. Also, something, this is not paleo because I'm sure they didn't have juicing machines, but what is your thoughts about, I mean, there seems to be a lot of talk about juice, whether you do it at home or you go and buy the $7 bottle of juice. What's your thoughts about getting your vegetables through juicing versus cooking or, and then we'll discuss this idea of cooking or raw.
Yeah. So I personally suggest that my clients avoid juices. Juice is basically the carbohydrate part of the vegetables. So depending on where you are health-wise, it can be okay to incorporate one or two juices in a week. Typically, if I say it's okay to drink a juice, I mean a green juice might have a little bit of apple in it. I definitely recommend avoiding things. I can just speak to my personal stance. Like, I recommend avoiding things like carrot juice, beet juice, anything that's really fruit-based is just going to put so much sugar in your system, and sugar is very pro-inflammatory. And the thing that separates juice from food, whole food, is the fiber.
Yes, after a juice machine, you got all this great stuff. You're like, wow, I should cook this or something.
Yeah, exactly. But that fiber actually helps slow down the absorption of the sugar into your system. And so I typically recommend people eat the whole food and not the juice. So that's my personal stance, and other people have different opinions on it. But just I try to pay a lot of attention to the amount of sugar that I consume, and I try to be very aware of that with the recommendations that I make to my clients. So I would say skip the juice or have it once in a while. But keep in mind that when you're having juice, you're not actually eating a vegetable. You are getting some, you know, vitamins and minerals, but you're getting a lot of sugar too.
Oh, that's a good point. Although I have to say, I do like making a juice occasionally. I have a juicer myself, and I like to make it. But then I see all the leftovers, and I go, gosh, I wonder if I could cook something up with that, you know, kale that just went through there or something.
Oh, a lot of people do. Yeah, definitely.
Oh my gosh, that's so fascinating. Well, we need to take another quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some more with Kelsey Ale about nutrition. Then we'll also find out more about how you can get more information about her. So we'll be right back.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and I'm here tonight with Kelsey Ale, a certified nutritional therapy practitioner, and she's just been sharing amazing information about emotional eating and what we can do around that, as well as things about juicing I didn't know and inflammation things I didn't know. And we even figured out the difference between why you should limit beans and legumes, I mean, which sounds like a healthy thing. So this is fantastic. Now, before we had to take that quick commercial break, I had another question for you. And that's oftentimes I hear the debate between raw versus cooked. So many people say raw, 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 because that's where all the nutrients and everything are. You don't want to cook those out. Yes. And other people say to me, gosh, when you've got a belly that isn't digesting very well, you should cook your vegetables. What's your feeling on that debate between raw versus cooked?
I say yes. I think both are good. I think both are good at different times. I think that sometimes eating a lot of raw, consuming the raw cellulose and the raw fiber can be really hard on someone's system if their digestion isn't completely optimized. Also, cooking certain vegetables actually gives you easier access to some of the nutrients. The first thing that comes to mind for me is the beta carotene in carrots. The thing that makes them orange, and it's also the vegetable form of vitamin A, is actually more easily absorbed by your body when you cook the carrots, even just a little bit. Blanching them changes the structure in the cell wall that allows you to absorb more of the beta carotene. So yeah, I do think that it's important to get raw fiber because not only is it great for keeping your metabolism running, but it also feeds the good gut bacteria that we all want. And I think we hear a lot about like probiotics. And so eating fresh fruits and vegetables does help feed the probiotic bacteria. But also, yeah, again, if it's too hard on your system, maybe your body prefers more cooked foods, and that still gives you a lot of nutrient benefit and a lot of good fiber. So I say switch it up and, you know, even keep it seasonal. I think a lot of people, if they listen to their bodies, will eat more fresh, raw things in the summer and more cooked, warm things in the winter. And that all, I think, ties into our greater circadian rhythm and can really promote overall health at the end of the day. So
okay, fantastic. Well, you know, you brought up another question for me really quick, though, this idea about seasonality. In today's modern store, it seems like they have the same day in and day out. When we think about seasonality, it's okay, kale and squash in the fall and early winter, and, you know, peaches in summer. Does paleo go with the seasonality? Because I sometimes find it really hard to be seasonal if you just go to a traditional store.
Yeah, oh, definitely. It's really challenging. Paleo, I think it depends on which way you want to go. Once you're inside the kind of construct of the pre-agricultural revolution foods, I think you can kind of do what feels right for you and for your body and based on what you have available. I would much rather you eat, you know, an orange in the summertime, even though those are more typically considered like to be harvested in the winter, if that's your best option for a fresh fruit or vegetable. So I don't personally stick too closely to seasonal eating, but it can be really beneficial, you know, if that's what you have available to you.
I'm glad you brought that. I've always wondered about that. People say, well, you know, if it's agricultural, you should be eating kale when kale grows, not when it doesn't grow.
Yeah.
Well, hey, it seems like yeah. It's probably pretty good for you regardless. Although, like me,
exactly.
Not growing up in a vegetable home, I have to tell you, things like kale did take an acquired taste, a time to get used to.
Oh, I believe it. I'm sure. I think a lot of us were more familiar with it as like a salad bar garnish than an actual right. food, or like until a few years ago when right. it became popular.
And even then, it took me a while going to farmers markets and actually asking the farmer, "Okay, I've tried this. How do you cook it?" And that's what I find delightful. Oftentimes,
yes.
The farmers will tell you exactly how to cook it. We're just about out of time, and I want to make sure the audience has plenty of time to get to know more about how to find out more about you and your work, as well as I know you have a great gift for us. So tell us more about how to find you.
I do. Yeah, so my website is kelseyale.com. It's ale like the beer. I'm trying to make it easy for people to spell it. And if you go to my website, there is an opportunity for you to download a free copy of my ebook that is the 5 keys that I think are really essential for vibrant health. So the ebook is called 5 to Thrive. It's completely free. It includes a lot of actionable steps that you can start healing your body today through natural and holistic means. You can also follow me on Instagram. I love posting pictures of food. You can find me at The Kelsey Ale, as well as on Facebook. Again, The Kelsey Ale. If you search that, you will find my page. And I try to keep updated as far as recipes and interesting articles regarding natural health and just different points of consideration to keep you entertained and healthy.
Oh, that's fabulous. And I love that. So it's The Kelsey Ale and like the beer.com.
Yeah.
And, it's KelseyAle.com, but The Kelsey Ale when you're looking on social media. So we'll find.
Exactly.
We'll have that up on the show page for you guys. And go over to KelseyAle.com to get her free book. She calls 5 to Thrive, the 5 keys to creating vibrant health and healing for your body. I downloaded it. It's just full of actionable tips, which I just love. Thank you so much, Kelsey.
And, of course, my pleasure.
Oh my gosh, everyone, this has just been fascinating. And I know because one of the things that we don't hear enough about is how we eat creates our body. And I want to say for myself that understanding nutrition, a lot about nutrition, I still have a long ways to go. But once I started to take it seriously, that's when my health started to seriously change. So thank you so much, Kelsey, for being on the Autoimmune Hour.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to talk to you today.
And everyone, go have a great weekend, whatever your adventures. And as always, enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.